Let me first just introduce myself. My name is Mary Ellen Erlinson, and my job in the world outside of Holden is as Chief of Therapeutic Recreation at Fairview Hospital in Minneapolis, a city that probably not too many of you have heard of around here.
That's right next to St. Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, right. That's where I live. As part of my responsibilities there, I've been involved as a therapist on the senior treatment program for the past 7 years, which is a treatment program specifically geared to the emotional mental health needs of the older adult, senior citizens. And I might be referring to STP, so know that it's not the motor oil, it's the senior treatment program. And so I probably won't say all the whole words. You might have been curious about the title, Is Grandma Really Senile? And I have certain fears that you might come to hopefully find all the answers. And unfortunately, I may not have all the answers. In fact, I probably don't have lots of answers, but maybe lots of questions. Hopefully lots of questions and things that might bring some new insights, things for each of us to maybe increase our own awareness of the needs of older people that are in our environment, whether they're related to us or unrelated to us. So, and I guess because each situation is so individual, may not be able to address, you know, is my particular friend, relative, etc., senile, but maybe we'll give you some framework for knowing the kinds of questions and areas to think about once you leave here. So as we proceed through the session, probably some of the main things I would hope that will come away from here are maybe an increased awareness, maybe an increased sensitivity to older adults, which I guess I think is really important and has felt very close to over the past years as I've worked with older adults. Partly, I guess some of my comments will be somewhat of an advocacy nature in terms of the needs of older adults. It's hard not to be working with older adults and sense some of the needs and some of the areas that I still have frustrations on as far as what is or is not available. And so maybe striking chords with some people where you may have an opportunity to help in developing programs that would work with older people. Various points I'll be referring to what we do at the senior treatment program, but I don't want to get too much into just what we do there, since it's a program that I'm not sure how many other places, when we started the program, we weren't aware of any places elsewhere that had quite the same setup that we had. And I'm not sure since then if some other programs similar may have developed elsewhere, but since not everybody here is going to have ready access to our program, I don't want to just dwell on our specific program, but to give you some ideas of the kinds of things that we do within our program to try to answer some of the questions and to do some of the assessments that we do. And then just also looking at where the emotional mental health needs of the older person come into play as they relate to potentially confusing those with quote-unquote senile behavior, which is kind of a catch-all term and really we could go into a lot of other specifics on the various kinds of organic changes, but senility has been kind of a catch-all for the kind of memory loss confusion that is often noted with older adults. And hopefully maybe just viewing our own role as we relate to older adults in our lives.
Is this a hospital bed situation?
Mm-hmm.
Or it is?
Right. In fact, next thing I wanted to get into is just kind of a little bit of our unit's philosophy and the development of the program, because I think that's real important as to what we're about and how we go about assessing the needs of the older adult. Now it's probably been about 7.5, 8 years ago, people at Fairview Hospital had determined that there were some unique needs that an older adult would bring into a mental health psychiatric treatment unit. And there were some different components that they looked at. First of all, one of our basic philosophies is that older people can change, they can learn, and they can show growth experiences. You know, that you can teach an old dog new tricks, that it's not you know, that once a person's older, that they can't learn some new ways of coping and some new kinds of behavior. So I think that's really the heart of our philosophy, is that people can learn some new ways of relating, some new ways of dealing with problems, etc. Also that an older person brings in a little more complicated set of problems because of some of the changing needs as far as physical needs, the physical changes, so that traditional psychiatric units for adults would probably not be as geared into the medical kinds of needs as what our particular program is. We have a fairly heavy medical emphasis in addition to the psych, and particularly it's gotten more and more so as our cases have become more complex over the past few years. Something else we recognized is that older people maybe would benefit from being in a unit together with other older people, where they would maybe have some more things in common, would be able to relate to some of the similar life changes that each person is going through, and that they could be with a peer group in a small unit. We have a 20-bed unit, so it's quite small and essentially very much of a community kind of setting. And that also in an adult mental health unit, the pace of treatment is usually, you know, that an older person, particularly because a lot of the needs that an older person bring in might be depression and that sort of thing, and we could easily kind of get lost in the shuffle and kind of not noticed and just kind of go through the program. So we felt that we could be more in tune with the needs in a separate unit. Some of the things we really particularly look at is that older people are going through often increasing number of losses. If you can just think about, you know, in your own lives or people that you've known, the various changes of losing spouse, perhaps friends, no longer maybe working, that loss of the kind of the identity that comes with a job, and if people don't have something to replace some of that identity, and if their whole life has been built around a particular job, you know, there needs to be some new opportunities there. The physical changes, which may be really limiting and cause a real adjustment, whether it's been through physical disabilities or just kind of the slowing down. And some of that can be real difficult. Maybe, and what slowing down is to one person may not be the same as to another person. And if somebody's really used to being a goer, and they might have a hard time just adjusting to slowing down and consequently think that they're less of a person because maybe they can't do everything that they used to. And so that the older person brings into our unit a unique set of concerns, and that people who maybe throughout their lives have been coping well may all of a sudden find that there's just so many losses that they become overwhelming, and consequently some of the behaviors that are seen are some of the depression that particularly is one of the big areas that bring people into our unit, and the kinds of symptoms of that with the social isolation, where people are just no longer reaching out and spending time with other people. Oftentimes that too leads into things like not cooking for oneself, which I think poor nutrition also can contribute to some of the problems and the behaviors that we might see with the people that are on our unit. Along with depression, some of the symptoms that we see are sometimes memory loss, confusion, that sort of thing. And those same symptoms could happen with a younger person who's going through depression. And I guess one of the key things that we're about is feeling that with younger people, if somebody who is a younger person starts showing some confusion and some memory loss and that sort of thing, or become severely preoccupied or very depressed, you question that something's going on. Too often in the past, what's happened, if an older person has started showing some memory loss, confusion, isolation, you think, well, that's just part of aging, and that's to be expected.
What do you do for memory loss?
Well, it depends on the source of the memory loss. If it's an organic kind of change, there's some things that you know, you might be able to do less with that than as if it's a result of a depression, where we can end up treating the depression. And as a person comes out of depression, the memory loss may turn around.
Well, you use medication or just
vitamins? Choline?
Pardon?
Do you use choline?
That one I'm not particularly familiar with, that some of the treatments for depression are some of the various antidepressant medications, and occasionally, in some cases, electroshock treatment has been used, and particularly with patients who have coronary problems, because some of the antidepressants have side effects with the heart. And I never thought I would see the day that I would at all support electroshock treatment, because when I came out of school, that was just kind of something I was really against. But having seen in some cases where depression is very severe and where medication is not helping, I've seen ET treatments help. And then also you have to deal with the other life situations. You can't just leave it at doing the electroshock treatments.
Is that a long-term correction or a short-term correction?
Depends on what you consider long-term and short-term. We are a short-term unit. The average length of stay is...
No, I'm talking about the treatment, the shock treatment.
The actual treatment itself is just, you know, like, very brief. And a person might go through a series of...
Does the treatment improve over a period of time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it varies with individual people. Some people, you know, may never need to come back in for treatment, and we've had some patients who have been on maintenance ET treatments because it's like they just need that over, you know, like somebody else might need a particular medication, maybe on a monthly basis, just one ET just to maintain. That's in more of a rare occasion. And hopefully people can then be taught other kinds of social skills, community, through the discharge planning and use of community resources can be plugged into some things that will aid in the long term.
Are there side effects from electroshock?
Initially there's memory loss and some confusion that goes along with the ET, and that clears after like about a week and sometimes a little longer after the treatments have been ended. But that will clear. So anyway, we're particularly looking at trying to sort through what are those organic and what are those symptoms that are coming from the kinds of life situations that people are finding themselves in, whether it's a result of chemical abuse, which you can find frequently that through either medications or alcohol. You know, if a person is, you know, maybe living alone and abusing medications, that can change some behaviors, and once they're into a treatment program, you can find some real clearing of some of the behavioral kinds of problems and changes that brought them in. The kinds of, I think one of the things that's really needed and that we use in our program is that there's a team of people that we're looking from a lot of different components, and you know, that might be missing in some particular treatment programs, that it's trying to look at the whole person, both medically, like through complete lab workup. A lot of times certain lab tests will show, you know, a particular dysfunction that could be causing some problem behaviors. We have the psychiatrist. Each person on our unit would have a psychiatrist as one of their physicians, generally the primary physician. Also, a thorough medical workup is really important. We have real active involvement with the social workers, who have a lot of contact with family members as well as with the patients themselves, and work a lot with discharge planning and helping also in terms of discharge planning if somebody needs an alternate living situation.
What's your evaluation of vitamins?
That's not something I can really address.
Do you use vitamins in treatment or not?
If somebody, you know, shows a particular deficiency, but I can't say that it's really specifically a defined kind of treatment at this point.
A lot of places are using vitamins and mineral supplements, mm-hmm. food supplements, and getting remarkable mm-hmm. results.
Well, I think certainly, you know, nutrition just plays a real part in the kinds of behaviors. I think some of the people that we have probably benefit as much from 3 square meals a day as they do anything, because oftentimes the people that we see in our unit have been living alone and just, you know, don't don't see that they deserve to cook for themselves, or just don't want to bother, maybe don't go out to eat, and so, you know, haven't been eating very nutritionally well, and that can cause a lot of problems for sure. We have an occupational therapist that does a kitchen evaluation, which is a good way to test for memory loss, questions of judgment, and so we can see whether somebody can function in that kind of environment, and to, you know, see how independent they can be and that sort of thing. The speech and language department, when ordered by the doctor, can do a organicity workup. There's a battery of tests that can help test for remote and recent memory kinds of issues, and can often be another key in helping to assess where the problems are coming from. We have nurses, and we have occupational therapists that talk, well, the OT also does the Coleman Evaluation of Living Skills, which is another kind of battery of questions that kind of get at, you know, how capable somebody might be of handling their own finances, how much are they aware of things in their kind of daily living areas. My particular role in the program is in therapeutic recreation, and I'm more involved in evaluating the kind of socialization and also looking for memory loss and confusion through the kinds of recreation activities and seeing how people relate. Do they remember from day to day? And you can tell, is it more of a depression or is it that they can't remember? And so trying to sort through. And part of that, let's see. So after, you know, everybody's gathered the information from all the different components, then we look at, you know, do we think that this person is depressed? Are they going through some other kinds of adjustment to their life situations? Or are they, is it something that we're not going to be able to change? And then we try to look at, I guess a lot of what we do is looking at how independent can somebody be, and that's also one of our major goals, is trying to maximize the independence of each person. And I found over the years that somebody may have a fair amount of memory loss or confusion, but they might still be able to function quite well within a nicely structured environment. And that, so we try to look at what kind of care might somebody need if they were going to go to a nursing care facility. Could they function in a group home? Could they function in a board and care kind of facility? Do they need intermediate care? Do they need really skilled care? And so we really try to help match people with the kind of possible placements that they could benefit from when they leave. And that's one of the areas that I can just see some real opportunities or some real needs in terms of alternative living situations for older people. You know, I think there's an awful lot of situations where people become isolated, you know, in high rises. You know, sometimes I think they're seen as kind of a panacea for housing for older people, but some people may still end up just kind of isolating off in their own little apartment, and I can see some real needs for more of a group living kind of situation. I've seen people respond really positively to the kind of atmosphere that we have in our treatment program. It's a small unit, they know other people, and it's not too easy for them to isolate in their rooms.
Yeah, more than one bed in a room, or how do you do that?
We have both singles and doubles. We have some rooms that are singles and some that are doubles. And periodically, we also incorporate that into the treatment to either see how somebody does with a roommate, if they're going to need to go to a facility where they're going to have a roommate. So it's a good place to kind of test the waters for that. Occasionally, let's say if we've had a husband and wife in, then we'll, you know, have them in the same room, though occasionally, because that might create more conflicts than they might be in separate rooms, just depending on the particular individual case. So we sometimes use, you know, where they live and who they live with to test out, you know, and use as part of the treatment program.
How do they get referred to you?
Well, we get referrals from everything from a client themselves who has happened to have heard about our program and thinks that, you know, maybe they need the kind of treatment that we have. We get a lot of referrals from social service agencies in the community, you know, like Lutheran Social Service, other county social service. We've gotten quite a few through adult protection in the courts.
What's adult protection?
Yeah, that's something that I wanted to for sure hit on. Adult protection is something I know we have it in Minnesota. I'm not sure if it's in other states, and it may be termed something else in other states. It's a social service program, in our case through the counties, that where vulnerable individuals, it works for adults, and there's like for mentally retarded, or other, you know, it's kind of under the same auspices as for like children that might be abandoned, that sort of thing, abused children. But adult protection is particularly geared to vulnerable adults, mainly older people who could be in situations where they might be exploited, abused, etc. And what often happens is, let's say it comes to the attention of the neighbors that somebody hasn't been out of their house in a long, long time, and maybe they won't let them in, and somebody has a concern, and they would call adult protection, and then they might end up intervening, and at some point there might even be a commitment hearing, depending on the nature of the problem, to see if somebody needs, you know, specific care. Maybe they aren't going to be able to handle themselves on their own. So adult protection is something that certainly concerned individuals should be aware of, you know, whether it's even intervening with family that might be difficult, or particularly with people outside of your own family situation where you're aware of people who aren't maintaining. We've had some situations where people have just, the kind of environment they were living in, just not caring for themselves. You know, it's just been incredible, some of the situations. And, you know, kind of a fairly sophisticated urban area, the states that some people have gotten themselves into because of not being able to care for themselves, and nobody notices. And I guess one of the points, too, I wanted to make in terms of some of the mental health needs of older adults. I think with adults and like adolescents, their behaviors are pretty hard to go unnoticed. If there's a disturbed adolescent, often they're acting out, and you know that there's a problem, and they're, you know, maybe causing some more direct problems with, you know, with their neighborhood and their schools, etc. The older person, it's awful easy for them just to kind of get holed up in a, you know, in their house, in an apartment, kind of on their own, and not come to the attention of others. And if they're depressed, they're not getting out, and so, you know, it's kind of a thing that can be really hidden, you know, unless people are really in tune with those needs. And if you're not seeing somebody out for a while, to think, to question, you know, that something might be going on with them. Other questions along the line of what we do in our unit?
Is this agency related? In other words, you get most of your referrals from social agencies, or do you get some from the private sector too?
Yeah, we get, I guess I didn't finish on where we got referrals from, like with the adult protection. We get referrals from physicians, you know, just either our own psychiatrists or medical doctors that know about our program. We get referrals, a lot of referrals from nursing homes that know about our program and know the kinds of needs that we deal with. Because I also find that some people, too, that get into a nursing home situation, and all of a sudden either they're becoming isolative or behavior problems that need some further intervention that can't be done in the home, then they might come into the hospital for further treatment.
How long is the treatment in prison and in GFC?
Our average length of stay has been about 3 weeks, and that seems to be getting shorter with just kind of the whole healthcare system of reimbursement and that sort of thing. It's getting more and more in and out, but it's about an average length of stay of 3 weeks. Generally,
do you charge by the day or by the week?
It's per day.
Per day.
What is the program called?
Senior Treatment Program.
Would this be covered under Medicare?
Yeah, it's a Medicare reimbursement, and other private insurances too would reimburse if somebody happens to be under 65.
Is it considered a psychiatric unit?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's considered a psychiatric mental health unit.
Mm-hmm.
About what is the range of the age of the people usually that you're dealing with?
Well, we say we take 60 and on up, though occasionally if we feel that the needs of the individual fit the kind of program that we're set up to do, we take somebody younger. Like, we think the youngest person we ever had was somebody in her late 40s who had been an alcoholic and had just really, I mean, severely alcoholic to the point that, you know, she was really confused, a lot of memory loss and that sort of thing. And she had something called Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, which is kind of related to alcoholism because of the problem with nutrition. I can't remember what component is missing in the diet, but that causes this. She wasn't even walking when she came into our unit. She did go through PT and was walking more by the time she left, and had cleared a little, though, who might have never be the same. And that was just a real sad situation to have gotten to that point at such an early age. And we've had other people, like, in their 50s that have been on an Alzheimer's-type dementia. And so, you know, they really fit into the kinds of assessment that we would be doing in our unit.
Can you do anything for Alzheimer's?
Well, the most you can do is, at this point, there's no way that you can really reverse Alzheimer's. You know, I think there's a lot of areas that they're beginning to research on that. I think some things can be done in terms of providing a structured environment where people can live as independently as possible. I think developing some understandings of the behaviors, because sometimes there are some behaviors that they're just not within that person's control, and to kind of develop some sensitivity to expect, you know, some of the lability and some of the agitation and that sort of thing, and to kind of be able to be open to handling that.
In Milwaukee, there's a support group for people whose parents are going through whatever kind of, maybe Alzheimer's, it might be just some form of difficult behavior. And I've come about 6 times to it. I find that they're always getting new insights and support. Mm-hmm. And it's really important, even if you don't have a live-in parent with you or wherever they're at, to be able to really.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty prevalent? Like in Minneapolis, do they have things?
Yeah, I think
like
there's
that?
Quite a few. There's a National Alzheimer's Association, and uh-huh. there's support groups, I know, like throughout Minnesota, and they have regular ongoing meetings, and they're starting to sponsor workshops, mm-hmm. you know, so you can learn more about some of the physiological components. But
is there a medical diagnosis that, like medical testing to determine if it is Alzheimer's? Because that could be.
The one tricky thing about Alzheimer's is there's no way you can absolutely diagnose it without doing an autopsy because of the nature of the problem. So you kind of, what you do is rule out all other things, and it's a diagnosis by, I can't remember what the term, but it's like by eliminating other factors. So you can pretty much assure that's what it is. But because of the nature of the disease process.
Aluminum on the brain, I understand.
Well, they just found markers that in Alzheimer's there's a reconfiguration of parts of the components of the brain. They start getting into ganglion bunches. And they found the marker of increased elevation of aluminum within those areas. And they've also found some other markers in terms of a change in the doping within the brain activity. They now have a test where the person, it's some new equipment, it's like a scanner, but it's a new technology, I can't remember the name. They ingest a radioactive marker and they can watch the functioning of the brain, and there are some indicative patterns that appear to closely resemble it. She's right, you've got to slice the brain open in order to determine it. Unfortunately, that wrecks the patient, so.
Well, I was wondering in a lot of cases whether or not this particular disease, from the particular area my mother comes from, she was told that my grandmother is supposedly senile and has been that way since she was, well, I guess, going that way about the time of being 69, and she's now 83, and it was said that, she's just probably had a lot of little strokes. Now, is this something that Alzheimer, whatever it is that you call it,
That would be different. That would be another.
That would be another thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I don't even know. It seemed to me that that was just something that was said, that there wasn't any tests done to say that this is really what she had.
Cerebral vascular hemorrhages, they call it. Mm-hmm. My mother had that before she had a real hard stroke at 85 and died.
She had a lot of little things?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the only way
she would black out.
Oh, okay. Now she's never done anything except for just started to forget, stay isolated, stay in house, not take care of herself or my grandpa. And grandpa died, she moves in with mother, stays there for 5 years. My mother says, she's dirty, she smells, she can't clean, she keeps her more isolated. Grandma finally eventually goes into a nursing home. It was too much for my mother. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's kind of like, I could tell when I take her maybe for a few days and get her to fold some clothes or do something, there seemed to be more life in this person. And I knew this is making this situation a lot worse, but I wasn't in a position with two little children, or because I happen to be the favorite granddaughter, to take this woman and to do something with her life. Mm-hmm. So now she is in a nursing home, just really waiting to die, because physically she's fine, but mentally.
Mm-hmm. What point do you, if you have the mother and father who are not living with you, at what point do you inject yourself into their life and start saying that this is inappropriate, or this we're going to do something corrective? I can see if the person has a butcher knife and is chasing one of their mate around the room, that you require some interdiction to the situation. But I don't think that drastic of a situation is necessarily when you do it. What point?
I think the sooner, I'm just speaking from my own personal point of view, Rudy and I have already gone into a retirement center where they have nursing facilities. And our daughter said that was the greatest gift we could have given them. Because she says, now we know you'll always be okay because you're there with friends, you've gotten acquainted with the community. And if you need to go in into the nursing facilities, you can. You're right there, and you don't have that traumatic move. Decision you have to make. You don't have to make that decision when the time comes.
Yeah, my parents did something similar to that 5 years ago. They just decided that they didn't want to keep up a house anymore and moved into a high-rise apartment. And that was just it was so nice to see them decide to make some changes. That's not always going to happen. And we would have, been supportive of them if they wanted to stay in their house, but they, chose to make their own decision. And it's nice, if people can go ahead and make that decision. But that's a real hard question. It's, one that, there's not an easy answer. There may not be just one right answer, but I think a lot of it just depends on factors of, number one, a person's relationship with that, if it's parents, what kind of close relationship you have and how much you understand what their needs are, and if you're able to observe and see when it's becoming more of a life-threatening thing, and when is it meeting our needs to suggest a change, and when is it meeting their needs, because there's the problem of, we see on some hands where some families come in where the family members want to take on so much responsibility and not allow decision making, and some of the parents might just go along with it. In the other case, it's somebody not willing to intervene when maybe it's a real problem situation, or unable to see that maybe that person can't handle it still on their own.
How much work is being done on?
Can we follow up? Are you going to change the subject?
Pardon?
Are you going to change the subject?
Hope not.
Because this is something that go ahead if you were gonna. It's not like you're gonna change. I'm sorry.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about. Changing the subject. I was going to ask if there was going to be what kind of work is being done to retard the situation or to enhance or make better the actual person, other than a consultation and maybe some physical therapy and that kind of thing.
Okay, I think that's maybe a little bit different. You're looking at more the kind of actual, what can we do once we figure out what some of the needs are?
Right.
Let's hit that one after we...
Okay.
Does anybody else have any comments in terms of...
Well, I went through a situation with my mother, and in her situation it was depression. It was getting to be, and she wasn't taking care of her needs, and she wasn't going to do anything about it. And what I see there, after I spent more, she was being neglected up there. She was up in North Dakota, so after a trip up there, we got our meals and wheels, and that still wasn't doing it. So we did have to intervene and move her in to a retirement home because it was, I gave her some alternatives. And I had to really wrestle with it because I didn't want to violate her and tell her, who am I to say, Mom, you can't do this, you have to do that. I mean, she's a person with most of her mental facilities and so on, and yet she was neglecting herself. And I had to really wrestle a great deal with this. But the thing I did want to say is that there's no simple answers. However, there are so many resources that are available. Well, after I talked to the chaplain at the nursing home and her pastor and a few people, if you spend time, you begin to get a little network built up. And I spent about three days up there in Fargo, and I had this like a little support group going around here and trying to work out my mother's situation. It made it so much easier. And then I came back up, we got the room in the retirement home, and 2 weeks after she was in, she said, boy, she said, I like it so well here, I want to spend the rest of my life here. Well, I was so relieved. But the point I want to make is that use the facility, snoop around and talk around and ask questions, because there are so many resources that are available for seniors. And this is in Fargo, North Dakota. And Fargo isn't all that large of a city, and yet there's all kinds of people there who are ready to help.
And if you can get them into a church-sponsored nursing home, I think it's all a difference in the world.
Yeah, that's what she did, and she loved it there.
I know.
I'll spend the rest of her life there.
I'm on the board for Lutheran Homes in Southern California, mm-hmm. and I am so impressed with the treatment they get. And usually when a person can move in there, just practically a vegetable, and within a few weeks, they're running things, you know, just organizing and just having a marvelous time. But it's just the environment. The love is so healing. The love that they experience in these homes and the good nutrition.
I think your point, just even if you're questioning, well, when should I intervene and when not, I think it just helps you to be more aware, you know, if rather than just plunging ahead and doing something, if you think to question and wonder and you know, kind of struggle with what to do and when to do things, and using other people as a sounding board and not being afraid to, you know, ask the individual unless you know that they're, you know, some people are at a point that they can't make their own decisions and you need to do some interventions.
For example, I talked to the chaplain. He gave me a good, yes, a really good solid aid. And the social worker, and the one who is in charge of the retirement center, and her pastor, and then some lady at Lutheran Social Service, an old friend of mine who works with elderly. He has about 5 or 6 people, and by the time I talked to them, the answer became so clear in how I would handle it. A lot of good advice. So you just got to snoop around.
I really find that to be really refreshing, because now for about 7 or 8 years now, it was kind of, at least with my grandmother, my mother couldn't relinquish the responsibility. Sometimes I wonder if there was a little martyr complex there, that she had to do it alone. She couldn't even ask the congregation because she felt it would be too much of a burden. And so in that sense, she went ahead and made her own life hellish besides my grandmother. So I really admire you to be able to just say, well, this is a situation, let's deal with it, rather than, well, you know, there's no hope, let's just take her home and, you know, until we can't stand it, then we'll put her in a nursing home. And I think that's really admirable.
Yeah, kind of picking up on that, one of the things, too, that we see a lot, you know, where families kind of feel guilty and feel like they should take, you know, the person into their home and keep them at home as long as possible, that may be a real good option, but then again, it may not. You know, I found sometimes when the person has really responded to being with a community of people that are involved with the activities and enjoying so many things, and then the family wants to take them, home to their house, but they work, you know, husband and wife working all day, have family responsibilities, and here's the person sitting maybe in an unfamiliar neighborhood, maybe
alone.
No longer driving,
all
alone, and it would be far more healthy for them to be in a facility. And I think, you know, nursing homes have certainly come a long way from what at one time, you know,
the poor farm.
It was a problem.
Yeah, the poor farm.
And I think, you know, there's so many good places that people can be and just thrive and do so much better and be with peers and, you know, continue those social relationships. And it's, you know, so that's a lot of times what with, we have a family support group that meets weekly with any members or significant others of people that we have in the hospital, and we have staff that do, you know, the family support group and help families, you know, do the kind of thing that we're doing here, the kinds of things that in some cases doing specific work with maybe a family on how to relate to this particular patient, you know, if it's somebody who's become real dependent, teaching them how to kind of wean them from some of that dependency if possible. And so, you know, that's a real important area that try to also relieve families of some of the guilt, and sometimes some of the patients are pretty good at, you know, laying it. It's a real tricky area to kind of work through. But getting back to as far as some of the ways that we go about relating to people once we're there in our unit, we really do a lot with kind of, I guess in my particular area, I could say like the three R's: remotivation, resocialization, reactivation. A lot of kind of getting people in touch with life again through being involved in various kinds of recreation activities, you know, mainly with groups, everything from table games to music to physical activities, outings away from the hospital. I don't do as many of the crafts. The occupational therapists do more of the crafts, which also are a real great way to build some success as well as some of the recreation activities. Like to do a lot with values clarification kinds of activities, helping people to affirm and reaffirm who they are, what's important to them, and helping them learn more about each other. And you find that you know, initially people are real resistant to wanting to come out and be involved in the various kinds of programs, and it's recreation is an expected part of the program, you know, with folks. And find people not wanting to do it, and you know, we expect and require that they come in. And when I first started working there, that was real hard for me to do, because, you know, ultimately you want recreation to be voluntary and something that you choose to do. But you realize after you've kind of pushed people to become involved, they experience success, they realize, hey, this is kind of fun, they like being with the group, and often by the time somebody leaves our unit, they are coming out, they're checking the schedule board to see, you know, what they're scheduled for, are, you know, initiating activities even during their free time and that sort of thing. And so a lot of it is a lot of the socialization process.
Now you're talking about people in the 70s, aren't you, mostly?
Well, actually, I'm not sure what our average age would be. The oldest person we've had in our unit was just this past year, was 104.
Oh,
delightful woman. You had to almost shout in her one ear for her to hear you. But she happened to have been a black woman. And she was one of the people, probably the most positive self-concept I've ever seen in anybody. I mean, she was still ready to learn new recreation activities. I mean, she was still just real vital. She wasn't taking care of herself at home. You know, her apartment, they had to shovel the cockroaches out. You know, she just wasn't taking care of herself, but she was really pretty alert. She was really pretty intact.
The reason I asked the question, we got someone in the 90s that we're taking care of that quite healthy and just getting old. See?
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, how do we handle this person when she gets too old to take care of herself, which we don't know when it'll happen. Have you any experience on this with people in the 90s? That are you getting many in that age that that you keep for a few weeks and send someplace else?
Yeah, and some of them may end up going back to their previous facility. Probably the most unique referral that we ever had, and I don't know that we'll have another one quite like it, was a little Norwegian woman from someplace in South Dakota, I can't remember where. She had read about our unit through an article written by one of our nurses. It was in the Lutheran Standard. She had read about it. She was like 91, had thought all of a sudden she started feeling like she was growing old. And at 90, I don't think she felt old, but at 91, she felt old. And she had had shingles and some other physical things, so she had, I think she had called the unit, referred herself. Now, I don't think this lady really needed her unit, because she flew from South Dakota to Minneapolis, took a taxi to the hospital, but she was kind of, feeling depressed, and, she was old. She ended up going back to her home back in South Dakota, and I can't remember, I think we had even heard a letter or two from her after she had left. She had maintained some contact, but that was kind of a exceptional case, but it was kind of interesting, and that's sometimes what happens too, is that individuals start, I think our society and culture has a lot of messages that get sent to people about aging and about growing older and what that means, and some people have just kind of internalized it, and either because they retire or because some of those changes, all of a sudden, well, I'm too old for this, or when maybe they could really do it, but there's that kind of mental attitude they kind of need to try to turn around to show them, through doing some things. And it sometimes happens at different points. Somebody may start seeing themselves old at 65. Somebody may be at 95. All of a sudden, they just start feeling.
In other words, what you are saying, though, from your experience, the people that are aged, and through your experience, you're finding that it's better that they live in an area with other old people than to live by themselves. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Not necessarily. Not for one thing, I would really reinforce more multi-generational kinds of places. I think for the benefit of both spectrums, the younger and the older, that, I'm not sure that when I'm whatever age that I would necessarily want to be with all older people. It would be nice to have some peers around, but I think it's nice to have the energy of younger people and some of the kind of dialogue that you can have there. So
we have college students working in our facility. Well, Dan, from Thousand Oaks is one of them. That's just a sample. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like our staff here. Mm-hmm. They bring that youthfulness into the facility, and then too we're close enough to the college, so a lot of our people, we've got a woman who's in her 80s that has enrolled in an art course over at the college where they can take anything they want free. Mm-hmm. And I swim with a woman who's 88 every morning, and I got a letter from her while I was up here saying she missed me this morning because, she's been swimming by herself. But she's as alert as I am.
I was glad to hear you say that, because first, a while back, you were saying something about being with their own peers.
Well, this is in our treatment program, which is a little different than, necessarily living situation. And there may be times when people need a care facility, so being in a nursing home. But I think in terms of other options,
I think I'd get sick faster the minute I got in some of the nursing homes, because it's so deadly. They don't communicate with each other.
They aren't all.
They're just
depending on.
There's a lot of variety.
There's a big variety of nursing homes.
I know there is. But it's also hard to find them, too, if you are really.
You're going to get space in them.
Yeah.
Well, the good homes,
The retirement centers where there are different levels, independent living and.
Right.
And,
I know that.
And where you can get nursing if you need it, or where you go in and get a bed,
Yes. One thing I can't reinforce enough is the importance of keeping active, whether it's you having a chance to reinforce that with people that you're close with, or just with yourselves as you grow older. That I always did a workshop called Use It or Lose It, and I feel that that's in all areas, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, etc., that you have to keep in tune with using your whole self, all the time, because you can easily, the more you cut back, harder it is to get going, that kind of inertia. You can keep going and maintaining, and people do. And it's been really fun being like at Holden, seeing a spectrum of older people that are, I think I've heard statistics that like 5% of the population of older people are in nursing facilities. So that leaves a lot of other people that are out there doing things, and it's my own perspective kind of gets warped sometimes, not warped, but distorted, being with that particular population. It's nice for my own self to be among other people and seeing that people are maintaining, and we try to do that with our with our patients of going to outings and to other activities where they can be with peers that are maintaining well. So.
Would you repeat the three R's again for me?
Reactivation, remotivation, resocialization.